Greetings, far and wide. You are listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of March, 2025, and this is episode 36 of The Flip Side with Monica. I am your host, Monica Schaefer. Welcome to the show today. So I would just like to send a shout out to last week's program, last week's show. We had a twofer, you could say, a doubleheader with Blackbird 9 on his famous Saturday Snack Shack show preceding mine, and we did the 2 hours together with my brother Alfred, and you can find those shows in the archives. And yeah, that was we had a good time with that. And I would just like to remind the listener that this is the listener-supported network, and we just would like it if we could keep this network on the air. So if you can, please do consider supporting the network. And if you are already a supporter, thank you so very much for supporting the network. And I'll just give you the numbers. You can go to the website, of course, at republicbroadcasting.org. You can find all the information there, various ways to either send cash or check in the mail. The address is there. And here are the numbers that you could call: 512-246-9549, or toll-free number 1-800-724-2719. Okay, now I have a return. Okay, great, thank you. So after the bottom of the hour, I will give out the numbers for if you would like to call in and join us in our conversation. I have a return guest today. His name is Jürgen Neumann, and he came on in episodes 15 and 18. If after you've listened to this one and you think, gee, I want to listen to the archives of the previous two shows, you can find them from last fall, episodes 15 and 18. So his name is Jürgen Neumann, and he was the right-hand man for Ernst Zundel, or Ernst Zundel, if you pronounce it in German, for several decades. And Ernst Zundel is no longer with us. He died a few years ago. May he rest in peace. But I consider him to be an absolute giant in terms of having been a man who helped us along tremendously in our quest for truth about what actually happened during World War II. And the narrative about World War II, at least for my generation, and I would say for all of us, is probably the most distorted and lied about event in history. Everything was turned on its head and was really backwards. I mean, the things I grew up with learning in school and through Hollywood and through the mainstream media is completely upside down and reversed from what actually happened. And Ernst Zundel did much to reveal that to the world. And of course, for his efforts, he was persecuted, prosecuted, jailed, all those usual things. A great man who had so much to offer to the world. So in our first episode, we talked a little bit about his own awakening. Ernst Zundel, he didn't know the truth about World War II until he was a grown man. He was born in 1939, so he was a war baby. He's from Germany. He came to Canada as a young man. I think he was 18 or so. And so, yeah, in episode one, we went through that, talking about his awakening and then some of the trials and tribulations. In our second episode that we had last November, we continued with that. We talked about the Leuchter report, or Fred Leuchter, who went to Auschwitz and did some actual investigation of the physical place there, and then his various trials and you know, things that happened. So we really went into quite a lot of detail with that. So today we would like to expand on some of the, I guess you could say, the epic work that Ernst Zundel did, because there was so much that he did through the years. So first of all, I'll greet Jürgen Neumann. Are you there? Did Frank, did you say that you were able to pull him up? Okay, so I guess we'll just, I'll just carry on until you do get him on, back on there. Okay. Yeah, so I'll just tell you a little story. I pulled up a video from one of Jürgen's online platforms. Not sure if it was on his BitChute or Odyssey channel, and it just randomly pulled up a video of Ernst Zundel addressing a crowd of people back in, I think it was in the early 1990s, I'm not sure. And I couldn't find it just now to refresh my memory, but it, something really struck me, and it was quite amusing in the first few minutes when he was greeting the large crowd in the room, and it was packed. It, I don't know, maybe 50 people or so. He told the audience that a Jew that he had been talking to before this talk, and I think he was talking mainly about Adolf Hitler in this talk, and the audience was mostly young people, and Ernst Zundel addressed that point and was so delighted that there were so many young people in the audience, because he says, usually I'm speaking to a lot of gray hairs, you know, so there were a lot of young people there. They were very interested to hearing Ernst Zundel talk. And then he told about what the Jew had said. He said, oh, you could do that talk in a telephone booth. And Ernst says, well, this is a mighty big telephone booth. And everybody, of course, roared with laughter. Now, some of the young listeners to this show might not even get the reference to the telephone booth, because we don't see too many telephone booths out there in public anymore. But you might know from old movies and such that was a pretty small thing that was on many street corners back in the day before everybody had a phone in their hand or in their pocket, you see. So, yeah. Do you have our guest on the line yet? No, maybe. Okay, no problem. So what we're going to address today is radio, I think it was all by radio, perhaps Jürgen will correct me, it might have been with video as well, but it was called Another Voice of Freedom that Ernst Zundel did these radio shows or these programs, and I think he carried that on for a number of years. Oh, wonderful. Jürgen, are you there?
Yes, I am. After going through a jungle of static and all kinds of other stuff, looks like we're clear and full speed ahead.
We are good to go. So perfect timing. I just gave a little bit of an introduction, talked about our previous shows that we did, and then I told the little story about the phone booth that Ernst Zundel, you know, was told by this fellow that, yeah, so I told that story already, and then I just started talking about the fact that he did many programs on something called A Voice of Freedom, and I wasn't even sure if that was just radio or if it was with visual as well. I'll now pass it over to you to tell us a little bit about that and maybe how many years he did that for, this show called Another Voice of Freedom.
Yes, we got into that when we got enough support to be able to get some reasonable consumer video equipment and audio equipment in order to make material that could be broadcast. And we started off with the video, TV broadcasting, and with chose Another Voice of Freedom as the title, and we started it in June 1993. Was so we decided it was, you know, to try to get our outreach out there better than it was. And so this is before the, you know, the internet was a big thing, and we certainly weren't conversant with the internet at all at that time. So therefore, we were doing the best we can, and this was satellite broadcasting. down in the U.S., they have companies that will broadcast for you up on satellites. There's old satellites that that are floating around in space that no longer fit the needs of the people who originally put them up there. And now they put up new ones, but the old ones are still kind of useful. So they sell these companies time on the satellites that are still useful at a cut rate. And then we send them our material, and then they will broadcast it on a given time. Usually it was on a Sunday evening. So that, of course, once we started that, first thing we do, as Ernst did, was send copies of the programs to the media, and of course they just, they were very excited about that one. So we got lots of interviews about that and newscasts about that. They even showed clips of the videos that we sent them. And so it was, it was quite a job. Eventually, we ended up, I think it was broadcasting about 275 programs.
So oh,
wow. Quite a lot of work over a number of years. And, of course, our opposition, they got very upset. And within the first 6 months, I think they went to the broadcaster that we had at the time, and they said, this is the way I understand it, right? The broadcasting facility of that company was burned to the ground. So consensus was it was probably because of Ernst. See, they contacted the broadcasting company, and they said, look, we don't like this here. We want you to, basically to censor him. We don't want, you shouldn't be putting that on there. It's hateful. It's this, it's that. And their reply was, well, we don't censor things. You know, this is the United States. We have freedom of speech here. But tell you what, we will make a deal with you if you like. You know, you can make counter programs against him, and we will play it before his program or after his program, or before and after his program, but we're not going to censor him. So,
oh,
therefore,
well, there you go.
That's probably why it had something to do with burning the place to the ground after that. Anyway, we got another one, and that worked out quite well. Ernst started doing radio programs as well at the same time, and he TV video broadcasts were like once a week, but the radio programs were like every day.
Oh,
he had
my.
Two programs. Yeah. So he had two programs. One was on an AM station and one was on an FM station. And right in the heartland of the U.S., it was quite a large reach. And yeah, we were pouring out the material. I was the, of course, editor for the video parts of it and stuff, and we had another supporter who did all the audio stuff. So yeah, we were going concern for a long time, that's for sure. I think we had for 500 or 600 radio shows, I think. All this is all,
wow.
Like all half hour stuff, right? Etc. So yeah, it was really interesting. They were all wound up about that, needless to say.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
So and at about that time, we also got in. We have a lot of supporters down in the U.S. And they have a thing down there called public access TV stations that they are required by law to have to allow local people to make content and broadcast content on their cable networks, and so on. Right. So a lot of them would contact us and request our shows. So we would mail them to them, and they would broadcast them in their local communities. But it wasn't all the same.
Yeah.
So
that's fantastic.
It wasn't all the same.
It wasn't all the same. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I mean, like, we were making half-hour programs, right? But some of the public access stations, they didn't broadcast half-hour, they broadcast 1 hour. So therefore, we had to re-edit stuff and maybe make something new just to fit the one-hour slot. And all the formats were kind of different, too. Some stations had regular VHS tapes, some used SVHS tapes, some used 3/4 inch U-matic tape, so we had to get into all these different formats so we could fill the orders and they could broadcast all our material down there. So that was also a going concern, and they really got upset about that one, too.
It was you must have been working hard, Jürgen, because I understand that you were basically the guy who was really the tech guy, and Ernst, you know, he was busy with the actual talking and that kind of thing, right? I mean, you must have been really learning and working hard, because this would have been a lot of new stuff for you.
Yeah, for some of it, yeah, it was pretty new. We were working an average of probably about 10 hours a day. And there for a while there, when we were pumping out a lot of material, we actually worked for about almost 2 weeks straight without a pause, about 12 hours a day. So that was really something else. Certainly was happy when that was over, the big rush.
Yeah.
So anyway, everybody's putting it up, and then one of our supporters down in Canandaigua, New York, he had, they really came down on him. A lot of the Holocaust lobby, I'll call them, you know, Shelley Shapiro and a bunch of these other, you know, basically anti-revisionist Jews who went down there, and they, you know, put pressure on the station to cancel his broadcast and so on. And so he was going to have a press conference, and so Ernst went down there as part of the press conference. And, yeah, it was quite the thing. They had police there. They had everything. One guy had a big boombox thing where he was cranking up some audio thing. I forget what it was offhand. But, you know, trying to drown Ernst out from talking on the talking to the media. And so on. Yeah, so it took a better part of the day, and the station actually got Ernst inside and interviewed him about that, what that was all about. So that was nice of him to do that.
Yes, of course, and it sounds like Antifa type of activities, doesn't it? I mean, these days that happens a lot with protests and then counter-protesters trying to scream louder or something so that nobody can hear the actual speaker. Yeah.
Yep. And if you want to know more about that incident, that's in one of our Another Voice of Freedom programs, which you can find on my BitChute channel. And it's called, I forget the number of it, but it's called Public Access and Freedom of Speech.
So speaking of that, can people find all these Another Voice of Freedoms on your, is it your BitChute channel or your Odyssey channel? Do you want to just tell the people?
BitChute channel. BitChute channel is where the complete collection is on there.
And that's...
It's John Robinson 101, all one word.
Fantastic.
And like I said, yeah, so you can go through the whole works if you like, and needless to say, lots of very good information on there.
Indeed. That is, it's just heady times, I would say, doing that. And just to put this into context for the listener, if you aren't fresh up on when things happened with Ernst Zundel and all his trials, the big Holocaust trials in Toronto, those were in 1985 and 1988. So this is after that. So I think that's absolutely fantastic, that work that you both did. And yeah, so people can go and find those and listen to those, and just there's endless, you know, you can really learn a lot from those programs. You know, the other thing that really caught my interest, and we touched upon it in our last episode together that you and I did, but then I started to learn a little bit more, and I'd like you to go into more detail about the Congress that Ernst Zundel organized in Germany called the Leuchter Congress, and things happened there made it very interesting. Can you get into that story, please?
Yes. So it was by 1991, this is when the actual meeting took place. By that time, Ernst has been on the wanted list for Germany, right? He's a wanted man, right? Because of his revisionist activities. So they're always after him. But that didn't stop him, right? So he flew in somewhere else and then drove into Germany, and he talked to all these people to organize this Congress. Of course, he wasn't going to be officially part of it, because otherwise he'd be arrested. So, but he was there anyway, and helping them along. And it was one of the main organizers was a young man by the name of Ewald Althans. And so they got this whole thing together, and they got speakers like all lined up. Like for revisionism, they had people like Fred Leuchter, right, which they named it, the whole Congress after him, right? And French revisionist Robert Forsson, and Swedish revisionist Ditli Felder, and of course, famous British author David Irving, who hardly needs any kind of introduction or anything. And then there's another gentleman, German former judge by the name of Wilhelm Stegli. He was back in the day. He was, I think he was part of an anti-aircraft unit. He was a young man around in the Auschwitz area. So anyway, he wrote a book about that. And, of course, he had been retired at the time, so they took away, I think, most of his pension and took away his judge credentials and all that for that. So it was all set up, and it was on, it's going to be in Munich, in one of the big museums there. They had a big hall for rent, very big hall, perfect for our purposes. So we get there, everybody, you know, gets to Munich, we're all set to go, and voila, the last moment, the hall cancels. Right? Needless to say, we were a little bit upset about that. Our lawyer, our main lawyer, Jürgen Rieger, he went in there and, you know, needless to say, tried to get them to change their mind and stuff, but, you know, they weren't having any of that.
I'm so just going to... I'll just jump in here, Jürgen, because this is classic, absolutely classic tactic of our opponents. They knew that that Congress was taking place. They could have said, no, you can't do it here. They could have done that, I'm sure, a month ahead or even months ahead. But this is a classic tactic. I'm sure that other people have heard of events or been at events where the same thing happens. I had it happen in Jasper, little town of Jasper, where I organized a speaker event. And my downfall or the disadvantage was that I did have time to organize this. And so people knew well in advance. And the last day before this event happened, they were going to cancel me. But I kind of, you know, managed to actually get the woman who was on the board of this church hall. I talked to her for over an hour, and at the end she says, Monica, you are very persuasive. But I'm talking about a small town where I had known this woman for decades, you know?
Right.
So, but there was a big storm. We could not have had it outside at all. But yes, I've heard of big events in big places where that happens. But do carry on and tell the story. What happened next?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just try to get you to waste your time and your money. So anyway, so everybody was kind of, okay, what are we going to do about this? Everybody's here, all the people are here, etc. So it was decided that, okay, heck with them. We're just going to do it right out on the street in front of the museum.
They don't like that. We'll do it.
And of course, all the police were there, etc. And so we started off with a car where the speakers would come up, and they would open the door, and you'd stand up, you know, where you get into the car, you stand on that and look over the roof of the car and speak to the crowd, right? And those who couldn't speak German, then Mark Weber from the IHR, California, he was there, and he would translate from whatever the speaker was saying in English to
and
German.
That's the Institute for Historical Review. Or Review, yes.
Yes,
good.
Review.
Continue.
Yeah. They have their own website. People can check that one out. They're an excellent group to find all kinds of good, solid, intellectual information on these subjects.
IHR.com.
Plus, they do a lot of political stuff.
Is that correct?
They do a lot of political stuff.
IHR.com?
IHR, actually, I think it might be IHR.org.
Okay.
Check both.
But basically with the abbreviation IHR, not all spelled out, is what you're saying.
Yes, it's just IHR.
Yeah, so people can find that. Okay,
so,
carry on.
So after we'd been talking for a while, Fred Leuscher got up, and he initially wasn't going to say much, because who knows, you know, who's going to get arrested for what, right? So eventually, our lawyer, who had been talking with the authorities, came up to Leuscher and he said, look, just been talking to the judges, the lawyer, showed him the Leuscher report, and they agreed that it was just a scientific report, and we can't censor scientific reports. So you're allowed to talk about it. So he did. Oh, the crowd went wild. They were just great. Everybody loved it. And so after a bit, of course, it was decided that this car is not good enough. So somebody went out quickly and rented a truck, a flatbed truck. And they brought that up, and so all the speakers and everybody got up on the truck. So it was much better. Everybody could see you, and everybody could hear you better. We had a sound system up, better sound system on the truck, and so on. So it worked out very well. There was a, like back in the day, the leftists in Germany and stuff were nasty to the point of being terrorists. But the only leftist that showed up on that day was about half a dozen of them in a bus, in a street bus, regular street bus, who went by holding signs up in the bus. So everybody got a laugh out of that. Obviously, they're not what they used to be. Well, yeah, it was a very exciting day, and a lot was said, and a lot was done, and then something happened. Right? After it was over, you know, we all went to the various beer halls and stuff. Restaurants got together, right, talking, and so Ernst showed up for that. And not long after that, somebody said something to the authorities, because the authorities came in, and they arrested him. They found him, and they arrested him.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, yeah, so they took him away to jail, etc. So that was kind of not the best of all things.
Just remind us what year this was.
1991.
Okay.
So wow. He was, then he negotiated his way out of there. They said, okay, well, you know, you're going to be charged with, anti-Holocaust activities and so on, you know, denying the, you know, the genocide of the Jews and so on, which is a law in Germany, right? So what you can get, I think, at a maximum of 5 years, I think, for that. So they said, so eventually they put him on parole because he said, yeah, okay, not parole, but, you know, you can leave, but you have to come back for trial. So they thought he would do that, and he would do that, because, oh, yeah, there's a big chance he wanted to try to organize a Leuscher-type trial in Germany, you know. So he was all good with that. And about that particular issue, his trial and so on, there are videos of it up on my channel, Ernst Zundel in Munich trial in German and in English, where he talks about all that. So I'm not really going to get into that. I haven't really brushed up on that particular thing. But if you want to hear more about it, you can go there, or we can do another show on it at some point. So,
yeah, and we will come back after these messages. Thank you.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history or both, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The book delves into a controversial and often overlooked chapter of the American Civil War, specifically focusing on Union war crimes against Southern sympathizers and civilians in occupied Missouri. It centers on the massacre that took place on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri, where Union Major James Wilson's 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry attacked a gathering of Confederate supporters, including men, women, and children, and the elderly. Lacey aims to shed light on this event known as the Wilson Massacre by presenting a narrative that challenges the conventional historical accounts by providing evidence from local documents, eyewitnesses, newspaper articles, and military records. The book has been praised for its effort to bring forth a nuanced understanding of the brutality of the Civil War in Missouri, emphasizing the need to acknowledge all aspects of this tumultuous period. Lacey's work is commended for its thorough research and commitment to uncovering obscured truths in American history. And you can purchase it at foothillsmedia.net, foothillsmedia.net, to purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozark.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge. And I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number is 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm on to something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Right, welcome back to The Flip Side with Monica on the Republic Broadcasting Network. So before the break, Jürgen Neumann, our guest, was telling us about this Leuchter Congress in Munich. I think it was in Munich, did I get that right? Anyway, in Germany in 1990, oh good, thank you, in 1991, and you know, exciting things were happening, and then he ended up being arrested and went to jail. How long did he go to jail for? He was let out pretty quick. Oh, yes, you said he was let out on the promise that he was going to be back for trial. Do you want to just carry on with that story? And then we do have a caller on the line. He's been waiting very patiently for a while, which is wonderful. Oh, and actually, I did forget to do that, is give the calling numbers if you'd like to join the conversation. So I'll just do that first, and then Jürgen, if you could tell the rest of that story, and then we'll start with callers. So the number is 512-248-8252 or 1-800-313-9443. Okay, over to you, Jürgen.
Well, I must confess that I hadn't brushed up on that story. So here right now, my memory says, well, I can't think of a whole lot about it at this moment. I just did mention you could go see it. But if we were going to ever do another show, I would brush up on it and we could get into some details.
Oh, no
but,
problem.
Me just flopping around like a fish out of water wouldn't work very well right now.
Oh, God.
However, no. I would like to say one thing.
Yes, go ahead.
I would like to say, to me, one of the final... the final things about the Leuchter Congress that reflected in my life afterwards. And that was later on that year. Like this took place in March. So later, a few months later on, I was visiting my mother. And while I was there, the mail came. Right? And in her mail was a copy of National Geographic. Now, she was never ordered National Geographic. She never reads it. She never, you know, so this was a mistake. This actually was addressed to somebody else on a different street, maybe 6 or 8 blocks away. But it showed up in her place. Well, I thought, just for fun, let's have a look at it. You know, so I pulled it out of the wrapper, and I had, you know, just started paging through it, and lo and behold, what do we see? We see that National Geographic had been in Germany at that time of the Leuchter Congress. They were doing a thing about Germany and about the political situation and so-called right-wing neo-Nazis, all that kind of stuff. So they actually had part of their article on the Leuchter Congress. And they had a big picture of that truck and the people standing on the truck talking to each other. And on the truck, also on the left-hand side of the picture, was yours truly, me with the camera.
Hey!
Right? And you couldn't really see my face because the camera was covering it. But there I was.
Yeah.
And so I pointed it out to my mom, and she was really excited. She thought, wow, that's cool.
My
and she
son
never got another National Geographic.
Yeah, into the National Geographic. That's fantastic. That National Geographic magazine was meant to come into your hands, even though it was misdelivered. Yes,
it does.
That's
seem to be.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So we had a Johnny from Michigan, but I guess he dropped off. But we do have a caller, Joe in Florida. Are you there? Would you like to join our conversation, ask a question, or give a comment on anything about Ernst Zundel, or ask Jürgen a question? Anything you want. Welcome.
Yeah. Yes, Monica. Thank you for taking my call, and greetings to Jürgen. Yeah, just a quick thing I want to say. So, thank you, Monica and Jürgen, for keeping the memory of this great man, Ernst Zundel, alive. The other day, recently, you know, I heard Candace Owen, very kind of big, very popular blogger now. She's doing her pieces on the Hoaxacost, is what I call it, and the lie of that those events. And I just, I can't help but think that, you know, it's Ernst that did the great groundwork. I mean, he would be very proud, but it's on his amazing work that now it's basically going mainstream, the lies that they built. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you both for keeping his memory alive. And then, Jürgen, the real question I wanted to ask you a question was, so among the things that Jews like to do is to promote the idea that they're also peaceful people, but they can be very violent, and among the things that can be violent, which is their preferential, is bombing. We see it in Gaza. We saw the King David Hotel, right? Jewish terrorists right. bombing people. So tell us about, if you can, how it was that Ernst was really the first, one of the first victims of this bombing in Toronto. And am I right in thinking they bombed his house, which was a residence, or exactly how, where was that, a place that he worked out of? But tell us what you can remember about that terrible incident.
Okay, talking about bombings and stuff, as far as I'm aware, when it comes to revisionists, the very first bombing was in France in 1965, maybe, a French revisionist by the name of Francois Duprat. Him and his wife were going out. They got into their car, turned the key, and it was a car bomb. And it blew up. It killed him and took off her legs below the knee. So that first one, I think, and probably the worst for revisionist terrorism. Now, come up to 1984, right? And we are at Ernst's building, okay? So what it is, or what it was, really, was his, number one, it was, when he first got it, he was an artist. Right? And so he made it, he had his business, commercial art, and then he was also fine art, he painted. He was the most prolific artist in Canadian history, actually. He sold over 600 paintings.
Wow.
And so he had his gallery on the main floor, and his commercial art business in the back. And upstairs, he had, you know, the usual living quarters. That's his home, you know, a dining room, kitchen, bedrooms, stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a combination of our work environment plus his home. Actually, as it turned out, I ended up staying there with him for a decade or two. I'd stay there basically during the week and then go home on weekends and stuff. So that's basically what the building was. So 1984... there was a bit of an explosion we had, and it turns out at the back by his garage door, they had set off a bomb, a pipe bomb, as the police discovered, you know, told us about later, a pipe bomb. So it blew up the garage door, and actually sent splinters all around the neighborhood, damaged cars and stuff. If anybody had been walking by and been hit by those splinters, it could have been fatal. So not that they care, of course. So that was the first one. But what was interesting about it was, you know, the police said, oh, yeah, we're investigating, et cetera. And after a week had gone by or 10 days had gone by, nothing. We hadn't heard anything, so Ernst contacted the police, and the one officer was very honest about it. He said, no, we're not investigating, actually. We think that you did it yourself for the publicity.
Wow.
So, yeah, well, I was right. So, Okay, fast forward to 1995, right? About the anniversary of Victory in Europe Day, May 1995. Ernst was off on a speaking tour out Western Canada way. And I was holding the fort there. And where I sleep is in, it's a long building, right? Not wide, but deep. So I was sleeping in the back on the second floor beside the washroom, my little bedroom. And I'm lying there in the neighborhood in which we were located. It's called Cabbage Town. And always a lot of weird stuff happening because there's a lot of weirdos in that area and stuff. So, you know, it's not unusual to hear all kinds of interesting things happening. But anyway, I was sleeping and suddenly I woke up. And I mean woke up. Just like snap of the finger from asleep to totally wide awake. And I thought, wow, what's that? So I'm lying there for a second wondering, and I hear way in the back some very low voice call fire. So I thought, oh yeah, a bunch of, wonder what's going on in the neighborhood tonight. So I lie there for a little longer, and then the voice gets louder, it gets closer, fire, fire. I thought, oh no, I better go have a look. So I get up, and when I step out of the my bedroom, I can look down the length of the house, the second floor, right into the kitchen. And the kitchen has a big window out on the street. So, and here's flames rising up above the second floor window.
Wow.
I thought, that's what the fire's about. All right. So I ran up forward a little bit, grabbed a phone, but that one had already, the line had already burned out for that one. So I went downstairs, and I got another phone and phoned them. You know, 911, and they said, oh yeah, no problem. They said, don't worry about it. They said, other people have already called in, so everybody's on their way. I said, okay, great. So I start getting myself together, getting stuff. You know, I'm going to leave the house, right? And then I hear the pounding at the side door. So I go over to the side door, and all it is kind of a regular frame wooden door. It's got a couple of hooks, and that's it. And the fire department's out there, and they can't get through this door. So anyway, I go out and unhook it. And they come in, oh, are you alone here? I said, yep, I'm alone. Well, you know, get out. It's fire. We got to go. I said, no, I'll leave when I'm ready. You know? They said, no, you have to leave. I said, no,
good
I don't
for
have
you.
To leave. And when I'm ready, I will leave because I still had a couple of things I wanted to do. So I quickly packed up the last of the things, and then I left. Right? Oh, I did make one more phone call. One of our supporters lived about 3-4 blocks away, and this is like 5 in the morning. So I phoned him and said, I said, hey, if you want some excitement, Ernst's house is on fire. So come on over. So then I went outside and waited. And then eventually other people came up, you know, of our supporters, they came up to see what was going on, et cetera. And he showed up eventually. And he said, well, he said, boy, your voice was really calm for what's going on. I said, oh, well, there you go. So we're sitting there, or we're standing there. I was talking to one of the firefighters. And we were talking about response time. You know, how you get there fast. And he said, it doesn't really matter how fast we get here. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, we can't touch it until Toronto Hydro comes and turns off the hydro so that we don't get electrocuted with the water touching the electricity. So they actually have to be here first. I said, oh, okay, it's fine. So we're standing there waiting, and a man comes up to me. And he says, are you one of the people from the house? I said, yes. He said, well, I saw the whole thing. I said, oh, really? Yeah. He said, yeah, I'm in the store next door to us. Somebody had broken their plate glass window. And so he was there replacing the window. And he said, the man walked past him with his container of flammable liquid. He could have reached out and touched him as he walked by. So he walked up to the house, poured the liquid on there, and a trail out, which he lit up, and away it went. And then he walked past him again. I said, oh, so you'd be willing to talk to the police? I said, sure, that's why I'm still waiting here. I said, okay, so I went and told the police, hey, we've got an eyewitness. The guy waited another hour and a half, and then he had to go because he had other business. And the police never did talk to him.
Unreal.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, so
well, you know
anyway,
what?
That was that one. And then about a month later, I think it was about that, maybe a little longer, maybe 2 months later, got a package in the mail. It was a brown you know, box, basically, reasonably light. And so we, you know, guy brought it in, mailman brought it in, and Ernst looked at it, and he's very sharp man, experience. He says, okay, everybody, nobody touch this. Something I don't like about this. It's addressed to him. It's got a return address out in British Columbia. So he put it on the shelf. And the way we went about our business, except me being a foolish man at the time, I couldn't resist. I went over and picked it up when nobody was around. Shook it a little bit, you know. Very foolish. But anyway, I didn't hear anything, didn't feel anything. I thought, I'll put it back, it's fine. So eventually, a fellow phoned Ernst, and it was one of our supporters from out west, in B.C. So he asked him about the P.O. Box address, and he said, oh, that was an address I used to have a couple of years back. So obviously somebody else is using it, blah, 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 so this is suspicious. So we took the box down to the police station, told them it might be a bomb. They freaked out, it might be a bomb, and you brought it here. What the, what's the matter with you? Anyway, they cleared out the area around the station by about three blocks. So they took it, and eventually they took it down to the bomb disposal place where they set it off, and they got back to us and said, yeah, it was a bomb.
Oh.
And it was set to go off when the package was opened.
Oh,
and
wow.
Had it done so, it would have killed everybody within 100 meters.
Unbelievable.
Very powerful.
Yeah.
So that was the explosive encounters that we've had.
Unbelievable. Thank you, Jürgen. And Monica, let me just say thank you. See, so Ernst is a true hero, right? In other words, he was one of the free speech pioneers. And they obviously tried repeatedly to kill him, and he stood his ground. So thank you, Monica, for this show, keeping his memory alive, because he is a real hero, and it's great to see. If only he had lived long enough to see that what his efforts really are paying off, where people can speak truthfully about history. Thank you.
Joe, I really appreciate that you called. That was an excellent call with these questions, and those stories are incredible. Thank you so much. Thank you again. And yes, we do intend to keep Ernst Zundel's memory alive. And I'm going to do a shout out to Katana, who encouraged me to do exactly that, and that did prompt me to call you up, Jürgen, or to write to you and say, I'm going to have you on regularly, like maybe every couple of months we're going to do another show on Ernst Zundel, because there are very many things to talk about. So a shout-out to Katana. He has a website, katana17.com. His specialty is making transcripts out of videos or out of talk shows or things that are in audio form. He turns into transcripts quite a lot, and his website is excellent, has a lot of resources there. I would encourage everybody to visit that website. Again, that's katana17.com, and Katana with a K, and just like it sounds. So just okay. Another
God
question.
God bless you, Monica.
Okay, bye-bye, Joe. Thank you so much.
And thanks, Jürgen, too. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Jürgen, something else about those attacks. Somebody claimed responsibility for at least one of them, did they not? Can you, do you know about that? Didn't a Jewish...
1984 one. I had some kind of a Jewish, I don't know, very convoluted name anyway. But it was some Jewish organization that claimed responsibility for the 84 bomb. But what's interesting is that one thing that not too many people know about, that around the beginning of the 1985 trial, as it was just about to get underway, Ernst was approached by the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they said, they gave him a folder, and they said, we have information that seems that there's an assassin has been put on, you know, a case to assassinate you. You know, it's a foreigner who's going to be coming into Canada, or might already be here, and it's a woman. And so you should be careful and on the lookout. And in the folder, they had a picture of her, even. So that it's good, you know, if you can recognize, everybody should, you know, look at the picture, and if you see it, you're wandering around or something, you know what's going on. So it was nice of them to do that.
Wow, isn't that something? And yet the contrast to the police not being interested, seemingly, in talking to the eyewitness at the later episode, I think that was the later episode you're talking about, you know, and then also just, yeah, they didn't seem to want to uncover this, or they didn't seem to want to help Ernst Sunderland, you know, the slow response and whatnot. I just find that quite interesting, but good that they did warn him, and good on Ernst Sunderland that these things did not stop him from carrying on with his epically important work, and it was always his intention to restore the honor of Germany and the German people once he realized what had happened with the lies and deceptions. But we don't have a lot of time left. I want to pass it back to you. Do you want to tell people where they can find your channels? We did already talk about the BitChute channel, John Robinson 101. I do believe you have an archive also. Do you want to talk about that, please? Where do people find your work?
Okay. Yes, on BitChute, that you might call it my flagship channel. It's called John Robinson 101, and it is all videos. And I have about, I'm guessing, about 500 Ernst videos on there. You want to look at it, but I have well over 1,000 videos on it. And so it's not just material about Ernst, but there's material from other sources about subject matter that would be of interest to all of our people and all people who are interested in different points of view on various documentaries. I even have culture on there. I've got some classical music orchestras playing and so on. So everything
very
that
nice.
May be of interest to us and help for us, I have on there. Now, on our archive.org, I had a couple of other channels, and they've been kind of deleted in the meantime. But finally, of the two that have been deleted, I finally figured out that maybe the problem there was that I had a lot of material about Holocaust revisionism and Ernst Sunderland. So I figured, okay, I'll start another channel on there and stay away from those directly. And so I started a PDF channel called Researcher_PDF, and it's all books and, you know, David Irving books, pamphlets, all kinds of stuff that,
and that's,
if you want
that's,
interest
that's
on history of our point of view, that's a good one.
That's on archive.org, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us again, Jürgen Neumann, and we will talk to you again next week. Thank you very, very much, all the listeners and the caller and the producer. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
One of the millions of people who feel like